Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on The Lost Fleet, Beyond the Frontier, Guardian. This is the third book of the Beyond the Frontier arc. That makes it the ninth book of the whole Lost Fleet stuff. Because, again, they're telling multiple connected stories. This is really following up, you know, on the heels of the last book, which followed up on the heels of the last book, which followed up about a month after the heels of the last book, which is the last book of the first arc.
Well, in this book, gives you a pretty solid idea who the major players are in that Lost Stars series.
I thought they did some of that in the previous book, too.
Some of it, but
we see more of them now.
Well, but here I felt they really solidified. Like, there was one person who was alluded to in the previous book. We kind of saw off screen, hey, somebody attached a ship to that orbital station in such a way that they could move it. Mm-hmm. That person got a name and now was on the freighter with Bradamont.
So now you're thinking that's going to be one of the peripheral characters or whatever in the Lost Stars. Okay.
Yeah. An Iger level character, I think.
That makes sense. I can see that. I was thinking more CEO Iceni and Drakon.
Yes. Those were clearly the front and center ones. Marfisa as one of their lieutenants, if you will.
Yeah, I'm curious how many of these characters that we're getting kind of sketched out here and getting introduced to are major players that we get the backstory on in that other series of novels that are written alternatingly with these.
We're led to assume that we get Bradamont's personal life.
Would not surprise me. Well, I don't know, actually, because I'm under the impression The Lost Stars takes place prior to these events.
I think prior to and overlapping would be my assumption. Otherwise, why make a big point of sending Bradamont over there? To me, sending Bradamont over there was, let's give you a character we've invested you in.
I took it as that allowed the Syndics to do some stuff that played into Gary's mindset and plans in this book.
It did that too.
Yeah, I think part of it for me is the timeline of these events are clear. Where the Lost Stars fits in, until we read that, we won't know for sure. But then also, where does all of this play into with the Lost Fleet Corsair?
Yeah.
Five-issue miniseries that Titan Comics did. And a lot happened in this book. I still think that the previous book felt like the fullest.
Yes.
In terms of major events that had happened. We get some good stuff here. I'll be honest, I was a little surprised that the fleet not only made it through Syndic space, but back to the Alliance space, dealt with some stuff there, and then headed off yet again, based on the request of the Dancers.
On the one hand, I was surprised. On the other hand, I didn't feel we could stay in Alliance space very long. It feels like Gary is the hero no one wants around.
Yeah, and I thought splitting him from the fleet and having just the Dauntless, his flagship, go to Earth was interesting. And it allowed for a lot of the central characters to be located on a single ship, changing the dynamic a little bit there, including some of the senators and that stuff. But also changing the dynamic on the fleet. And again, who's in charge of the fleet when he left was an interesting choice. And how that came about showed that as much as Gary thinks he's leading the fleet, there's still aspects of their mindset of more of a consensus-based leadership.
Well, it was a combination, if you're thinking of the scene I'm thinking of, it was a combination of consensus-based, but also trusted advisors saying, look, you're thinking logically, you're thinking rationally, but you're not considering morale among the fleet and number of factors. And like Tulev made an interesting point. I'm a man without a planet. So when it comes down to the equivalent of states' rights versus
national rights or something.
Yeah.
He's got no state.
Exactly.
I thought
So people are going to distrust me on that level as fleet commander. And I found that doubly fascinating because Kosaka, I guess is how you pronounce it, but this Johnny's home planet adopted Gary.
Yes.
And he adopted it in part because he felt so removed from his own home planet and he doesn't want to go home to his home planet. He doesn't want to see what 100 years does.
Which is understandable.
Yes. But you would think the man out of time would be the man without a state. And yet, very gracefully, through the crew of the ship, through the captain and that relationship, he's probably more tied to a planet than any of these people who have been the equivalent of out to sea for most of their life.
Well, it also raises the question of how would events have played out if it hadn't been the Dauntless that was Admiral Block's flagship, and therefore de facto became Gary's, but if it had been one of the other ships.
Yeah.
And depending if it was one of the ones where Gary would have just butted heads with the captain, or if it had been Duelos's ship, or somebody like that, that he could have gotten along with, but in a different way than he does with Des Johnny.
Yeah.
How would things have played out? And the fact that there's a rich enough set of characters and tapestry here to even be speculating on that, mm-hmm. I find fascinating.
Yes. Well, and at one point, I think it was within this book, there's a chance it was in the previous one, when he says, you know, I need to focus on this. I need you to focus on the fleet and the fleet movements and make sure I don't lose sight of things. And a little while later, she says, I told the fleet X. And he's like,
that was in this. You're speaking as essentially vice admiral of the fleet. And he's like, yeah, nobody's questioning that.
Yeah.
Did you expect them to? Kind of a...
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is funny because... And it goes to a recurring thing of him sort of not thinking before he speaks with Des Johnny at times. Because there are other times he flat out told her to speak for him for the fleet.
Yes.
And...
But he doesn't consider how that's perceived by others until that sudden moment when he thinks about, if I was on the bridge of another ship and I received that message from her, how would I take that? Because mm-hmm. she's not contacting me as captain of the Dauntless. Now she's contacting me not as a member of the Admiral's staff even, which means she's de facto acting as Vice Admiral of the fleet.
There's an aspect of being captain of the flagship that puts her a little more equal than others.
Yeah.
And stuff. Plus the relationship she has with Gary.
Well, and it's interesting the way different people refer to Des Johnny as his captain.
Yes.
And it's so funny because they use italics sometimes, but the tone is so easy to read when various people say, talk to your captain.
Well, and there are times where, yes, he's the admiral, but he kind of is subservient to Des Johnny in some respects.
Well, and one time he nearly says yes, ma'am, to her, and he gets halfway through that ma'am,
yeah.
And the look she gives him is just a, you know, if you want to die a long, painful death, you keep speaking, sailor.
If this were done as a TV show, like a Netflix kind of a thing, the casting for Des Johnny and Gary, critical.
Yes.
You've got to have just the right chemistry between them.
Mm-hmm.
And also for Rion.
Yes.
Because Des Johnny and Rion have to have a certain
yeah.
oil and water, but can work together sort of thing
yeah.
going. A lot of the others, there's half a dozen just different character actors you could just drop in and would do fine.
Yeah. Well, but at times there's this interesting dynamic between the captain and the admiral in terms of, it's like she can read his mind. It's like she's reminding him of things he's aware he's already thought. But other times, like when he's walking in to meet with the Alliance Grand Council, she informs him almost as if she's giving him a command. Yet when you stop to think about it, you realize it's actually in reference to their personal relationship. Don't forget to ask for a day off.
Mm-hmm.
And with Duelos or another captain, that could be a you need a mental health day type, don't forget to ask for a day off. But because of their personal relationship and the, we haven't gotten to be husband and wife for a couple months, don't forget to ask for a day off.
It's interesting because there was one passage in there where he was thinking something and she reacted to it.
Yeah.
almost not as if she could read his mind, but like literally she was reading his mind. And I'm not going to say she is telepathic.
Well, there were several times where it was very much a, your thoughts were written all over your face. Or if I were in your shoes, I'd be thinking that same thing. Or frankly, you're in some ways a creature of habit.
I agree with all of that. There were a few places where it felt beyond that. Either she's extraordinarily perceptive, which I definitely think is the case in some respects, of, you know, the door closes behind the senators without looking. She does it. It's just she knows the timing and...
Yes.
Okay, maybe she heard it or something, kind of.
She's aware of everything on the bridge.
But there were also, again, one or two places where it's like she... It seemed like she thought she heard something.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure the author's going anywhere with that. But I think enough groundwork has been laid that if she were to turn out to be telepathic,
yeah,
maybe doesn't realize it, I could see that.
Yeah.
Not expecting him to go that way, but it also wouldn't surprise me if she ends up having better insights on the dancers, because maybe she's not reading his mind, but seeing the patterns and extrapolating really well.
Yeah.
So, again, not totally sure what's going on there in some respects, but it plays well.
Yes.
And I'm enjoying the interpersonal relationships, both between the main characters and the increasing number of secondary characters.
Mm-hmm.
We get to see some more of the engineering group, one of which Shamrock may be transferring over to intelligence.
Yes. Yeah.
And was Iger on the... Iger's on the Dauntless, because yes. He's there at the end. All right.
Yeah. He's been there all along. And Iger's been interesting from the start.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where I don't think he doubts that Admiral Gary knows what he's doing. But there are times when he seems afraid of letting Admiral Gary go against regulations. And it's interesting the way it's a, sir, regulations forbid what you want to do. And even if you have the authority to do it, and it's almost a, I don't want to help anyone put a nail in your coffin.
There's an aspect of warning Gary when he's starting to go off the reservation, an aspect of trusting Gary when he's going off the reservation, and trying to both cover himself and protect Gary at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this book, there were one or two of the, basically, I don't see how you can be protected on this one. Are you sure you want to go that far off?
Yeah, and because of the difference in ranks,
yeah,
there's only so far Iger can go.
Yeah.
Because he was... a little worried when Gary was giving Shamrock access to a lot of intelligence information, and Gary's like, no, trust me on this. And he's warning of, you know, people back home may not agree with you, but when it all plays out and works out right, and Iger was duly impressed.
Yes.
Got totally on board.
Yeah.
To the point of trying to recruit Shamrock, which was unclear at the end of the book where that was...
Yeah.
Was sitting. It's such that she could be aboard the Dauntless at this point. She may not be. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
And I was okay with that. It moved the plot lines forward for those characters, subplots really, and left the author some wiggle room in the next book if he needs it.
Yeah. Well, in this book, we came back to Alliance space. We had to deal with the politicians. We had to convince the politicians to some degree to let the dancers go to Old Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the dancers were insistent they wouldn't negotiate till they'd been to Old Earth, which was a fascinating demand in some respects.
Well, and they didn't explain why they wanted to go.
Yeah.
They're basically, we're going to Kansas, take us there.
Yeah.
And at first people are like, where is Kansas? And then they realize.
Yeah.
Now, what was interesting here is they realize it's on Earth, and that in Gary's time, it'd been every 10 years they'd send a ship back, because it's a ways.
Yes.
But in the intervening time, they hadn't been doing the every decade, you know, ceremonial trip back with a ship, and 45 years ago, they built the Hypernet.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an aspect of the timing of building of the Hypernet, yet you're not going back every 10 years, that seemed a little puzzling.
When the Hypernet was meant to reassure the people, we still have a link to Old Earth. you can go there anytime. It was kind of the, instead of the once every 10 years we do this grand ceremonial gesture, we don't need something our military can't afford to do because you could go anytime you want with the Hypernet.
So maybe it was the military that could only send a ship back once every 10 years for ceremonial purposes, but any civilian, if they wanted to travel there, could?
Right. It was some big military ceremonial, I don't want to say 4th of July, but you know what I mean.
Equivalent.
Yeah.
It just seemed like, from what Iger was saying, that their information was woefully out of date because they just hadn't done any sent anybody in for intelligence gathering back in a century.
And because that's still military.
It just felt
yeah.
even civilian hadn't reported back. When we get the group that is, in theory, protecting the Sol system, and they've got all these ornate medals and stuff like that. I thought that was kind of humorous, and you can almost imagine just how overblown like a dress uniform could be with all of this.
Yeah.
And I love the comment on how, I forget it, who it was, one of the at that point, envoys. They've gone from emissaries to envoys.
Yes.
Rion's gone through a couple of titles, but not her, the other one.
Charbonne
was saying, well, maybe this is their equivalent of Gary, their big, massive hero. And then Gary pauses the video. So, okay, let's clear him out of the way. Let's see what's in the background. Everybody has all these ribbons and medals and all of this. It's like it's a ship full of heroes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, it turns out that they have no clue how to fly, how to fight, or anything of the sort, yet are still pushing the issue with Gary.
Well, they're underarmed, and this Johnny makes a comment along the lines of, it's almost as if our fleet was in the opposite condition Blackjack found it in.
Yes.
In terms of, they were purely chaos and charge in, and this fleet, or group of ships, is purely formation, to the point that when two ships are destroyed and effectively knocked out of the formation, the rest of the ships don't adjust, don't move, they maintain the original formation.
Well, and then when they take more damage and their other major ships are damaged and destroyed, all the other ships just evacuate. It's like, oh my god. Because you've seen with the Alliance, and really with the Syndics to a degree, what can happen with a century of war.
Yeah.
And here you've got a group of people that have been, you know, potentially a century at peace.
Yeah.
And over the generations have... It's like, well, this is what the manual says. It must work this way.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got somebody who knows how to fight just totally trounces them.
Well, and all of their formations are parade formations.
Yeah.
Meant to look good at a distance, but ineffective. And does Johnny, how does she phrase it? Imagine if the only stuff being done was being done by the people at Fleet Headquarters who'd never actually been in the field.
Yeah, the higher up, essentially the ivory tower types. In theory, this is perfect.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't work when the plan hits the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought some of that was interesting. I'm expecting more fallout from that in the next book. The reason the dancers wanted to go to Earth I thought was very interesting.
Oh, it was fascinating.
And was a game changer for the senators that had come. Hopefully a good one. And opening up that there's this other kind of branch of human exploration on the other side of the Earth system.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of why the Alliance had stopped where they had and such like that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that's going to play out, don't know.
Well, there was a branch of humanity that when they would get a star system would kind of lock it down and not let anyone else in or through.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically they were greedy.
Yeah.
Because at first, you know, Gary's trying to figure out, how did we not know about these people?
Yeah. They went one way, we went the other, and the two sides turned out very different.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Earth seems to be just locked in mindless bureaucracy.
Yes.
And seems just like a continuation of present-day Earth, complete with the different nations and such like that.
Well, they seem to have kind of declared planetary peace, but still have the equivalent of a United Nations where everything gets discussed ad nauseum until a consensus is reached. And they've been discussing for 45 years whether or not they'll allow the Hypernet gate that's already been built to be built. They've been discussing for over 20 years whether or not they'll let that other invading fleet remain in their space.
They're all talk, no fight.
Yeah. No action.
Which is yet another direction to go.
Yeah.
You know, too aggressive with the Alliance and Syndic, potentially, in terms of wartime, too much peacetime for this other group, and then nothing but bureaucracy for Earth.
Yeah.
There was a fair amount of universe building going on here.
Yes.
I felt last book, with the introduction of the three alien races, we got more of it.
I think the universe building, though, is part of why I felt that it was laying foundation for which characters were over in the other series.
I agree with that. I'm just wondering if... because after the Lost Stars, we get the Genesis Fleet novels, which is back in Gary's time, I believe.
Interesting.
But with some of this laying the groundwork for what's happening in the Earth system, what's happened in the other area of exploration, you know, where does the author want to go next?
Yeah.
And don't know, and I'm curious. I still go back to everything we've seen thus far has been from Gary's vantage point. And really the furthest we ever get from that is when he's like watching a Marine doing whatever they're doing, live or whatever through a video feed. And even then, that's still his perspective on somebody else's perspective. The minute we get to the Lost Stars, he's really not a player at that point.
Well, one of the funny things was when Gary is kind of reaching for the comm control, but not pressing it. And as Johnny looks over with that, basically, do I need to yell at the comm people again? And he pulls his hand back with a, no, I just needed to remember that I had assigned that task to someone who actually knew what they were doing. And
well, it was to the head of the Marines, who knows their job better than I ever will, sort of comment.
Yeah.
But what I love about it is there's aspects where we're very clearly sitting over Gary's shoulder. And I'm curious how the Lost Stars books go when his shoulder isn't there to be watching over.
Yeah.
Because we're getting everything either through his perspective or his perspective of somebody else's.
Yeah.
A lot of what we're getting with the dancers are how he's perceiving them or how other people are telling him they're perceiving them.
Yes.
Which is working. But again, it's a fairly particular lens we're seeing this universe through. And at times, it works better this way than with like an omniscient narrator because we're never seeing what's really going on with the dancers.
Yes.
With the bear cows or the enigmas.
I think if we had ever been with the dancers on their ship, just them, I think the revelation in Kansas would have been cheapened.
Well, and likewise, if we'd seen the perspective of the Syndic CEOs, a lot of things there would have, we would have had a different take on it.
Yeah.
I mean, we may end up seeing in the Lost Stars stuff some of these same events from the other side, not having the insight or even the timeline necessarily perfectly lined up for us as to what's going on with Gary and his fleet.
Yeah.
Which could be very interesting.
Well, and this was the book where Gary nearly had to abandon rescuing, was it 6,000 prisoners of war?
Right. When Shamrock discovers they've essentially got a fleet killer weapon, not quite a Death Star, but similar, near where they've got the prisoners, and this is basically a huge trap, then Gary's got to figure out what to do with it. They pull back, pretend it was just a glitch or whatever, they've got to go take care of something, and they'll be back hour and a half, go do the rescue, and then they figure out how to kind of maneuver it such to where they're out of harm's way. And do a fairly interesting maneuver, you know, getting the Marines down there to take out the trigger for that weapon while getting shuttles down there to rescue the prisoners and as cover for the other operation.
And what we never see or get an answer to is what happened to the CEO on that planet, the one who had been reporting or contacting us at gunpoint and then suddenly switches to being an avatar.
The implication is killed. Well, but we never know for sure.
Well, but they imply that she may have had a mental block on her that drove her to basically either suicide or death by whatever you want to call this, physical distress at what was happening. But they think that the people who had the gun on her were so low level, they knew to have a gun on her, but didn't know that the weapon that they were telling her to bait them in for so that these low-level people could trigger was going to kill them too.
Absolutely. And again, the stage was set from that in the previous series where some of the Syndic ships were blowing away the tethers for the Hypergate, which wound up destroying the entire system, including the ships taking out the tethers.
Yeah.
So certainly the higher-ups don't reveal all the information to the people that they're sending on suicide missions.
There were more mutinies in this book.
And a few avoided mutinies.
True, true.
When the Kallus Republic and
Rift Federation
were about to mutiny, and Gary knew it was coming, he was in a position with a little egging on by some people to basically send them home.
Yeah.
Under orders. Don't let them do it on their own.
Yeah. Well, and refit, resupply, reman. I mean, those were good orders.
Yeah.
They're orders their own people should have given them.
It's going to be interesting to see if in the next two books of this series, if those ships come back ready to work with him or otherwise support him when needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think they respect what he did.
Yes.
And I hope that's not just, okay, we're done with them, move them out.
Well, but to me, the interesting thing is, you know, the proverbial chessboard. Are they now pieces that support the Alliance or Gary?
Gary.
That's what I think.
Because one of those two pulled out of the Alliance.
Yeah, that's what I think.
There's a lot going on politically in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
A fair amount going on militarily. Certainly a lot going on just in raw discovery, both in terms of space and also alien races and such. I mean, the amount of new things, almost headline-level events, if you will, that have happened just in the last book or two here is pretty staggering. And plus the whole end-of-the-war sort of thing in the last series of novels.
Yeah.
Only been going on a century, who cares?
Well, but here we're watching different people cope in different ways with the war being over. Complete with one of the senators fessing up to Gary about the fleet that's being built and the fact that not only did Admiral Block survive, but he's being given command of that new fleet.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting because in theory it's going to be better ships, better weapons, you know, better condition.
Better the enemy you know.
But it's not going to have the people and the experience that Gary's fleet has.
Yeah, and that statement covers Admiral Block down.
It almost makes me wonder if the next time we see Gary's fleet is going to be fighting that fleet already under his niece's command.
That could be.
Definitely, there are a lot of things in play.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is there's a lot going on, but not so much that you feel like you've got to keep track of all of it at once.
Right. It's just unfolding naturally.
Yeah. And as we get back to one aspect, we get the reminders we need.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the book changed, I don't want to say changed tone, but it changed when he and the Dauntless left without the fleet.
Yeah.
Because now it's not, okay, we've got fleet combat and stuff. Now we're essentially just on a spaceship, and it's really conceptually not that different than, you know, a Star Trek or a Star Wars or something like that.
What I was disappointed in from that point moving forward was he looked up what used to be the protocols, the traditions for the ceremonial trip. And he did all the fun stuff for the crew, the equivalent of the crossing the equator ceremony. But he didn't look up ceremonial messages, ceremonial speeches, things that in contacting Saul, key phrases that would have assured them he was someone from 100 years ago, someone who knew the past.
What was the ritual opening to
yes.
when you come in, this is how you announce yourself.
I mean, I remember from my brief near collision with Model UN, everything that goes on in the United Nations has to have everything phrased in very specific ways.
It's almost like a Robert's Rules of Order kind of a thing for the universe.
Yes.
You're right. That was in keeping with how Gary should have acted. And if the entrance to the soul system had been him giving the ritual, you know, almost verbatim, every captain every 10 years does this kind of a thing, or a fleet admiral,
yes.
whatever.
Yeah.
And then he's met by this guy who's this grand muckety-muck of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
you know, get the hell out kind of a thing. He's like, that's not the next line of the script. And if he were to just have corrected him, no, you're supposed to say this. I mean, uh-huh. I know it's been a while, but come on.
Yeah.
That actually would have been both a little more humorous and I think more in keeping with the character.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting there to be more repercussions from the skirmish they had, minor though it was, with Mr. Metals, as he's called, because of all the metals. Not that he's around anymore. He's clearly blown to bits.
But I'll be curious what the repercussions are, in part because we didn't try to pick up any escape pods.
Yeah, but they didn't seem to really be in danger.
True. We seem to think the escape pods and the surviving ships got what they deserve.
I was actually surprised he didn't send Marines to the surviving ship.
They had no interest in those ships. It was just, those are salvage for whoever boards them.
Yeah.
But part of it was they had no respect for the design of the ships.
And certainly none for the people.
You know, they had too few weapons. They were all ornamentation as opposed to function. To them, they viewed the ships as useless.
They were very pretty, but not the least bit effective.
Yeah.
When we end the book, there's no overriding trajectory for Gary or the fleet other than, well, let's go home.
I mean, all the crew is getting a day or two on Earth. The Alliance is even paying for the shuttles.
Yes. Senators are actually acting responsibly and being nice.
Yes.
That can't be good.
Well, they were afraid they'd be there a couple decades waiting for Saul to decide if Old Earth was going to pay or not. I thought that was funny.
I thought this was a good book. I would have to say, for this group of novels, were 3 out of 5. The previous one I liked better than this, just because I felt a lot more happened.
Yeah.
This was good, but the author's doing a good job of not repeating himself from the last series of novels, where it's a bunch of jumps to get home. But he's tossing out so many breadcrumbs that I'm wondering what's going to bear fruit or whatever. Even the surviving bear cows kind of die off screen, and that tied up that plot line, but it didn't feel like a solid resolution to it.
But it tied it up in a manner that said, basically, the civilians came in determined to take charge of them, arguing for the rights of the bear cows. The civilians were effectively the reason the bear cows died and responsible for it, and then they blamed the military doctors and the military.
Basically, everything the military doctor and Gary thought was going to happen, happened.
Yeah.
And kind of, yeah, you called it, and yeah, there's nothing you could do to prevent it, and yeah, it sucks.
Well, the doctor came pretty close to saying, I think I'll lose my medical license because they disregarded my advice.
Mm-hmm. They blew it. I told them not to, and they're blaming me anyways, kind of thing.
I wasn't even allowed to be in the room when they killed the bear cows, and they're going to take my medical license anyway.
Yeah, I don't think they'll succeed in that, but I definitely see where that doctor's the scapegoat for a lot of it.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting the start of the next book is they fly home. And what the hell's happened while they've been gone?
Yeah.
And how do they react to that?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice to see Gary get a little more proactive on some of that stuff, but not sure exactly.
I don't think he feels he's had time to be proactive about anything. I think he constantly feels like the universe is throwing something at him that he has to react to.
I agree with that, but in theory, he could spend the trip through hyperspace or whatever going back without any kind of, you know, sort of Damocles over him.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping we get some furthering of the relationship with the dancers.
Yes,
in the next book or two. At this point, I can't tell where that next book goes or where that fifth book would resolve to.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I'm okay not knowing, but it's one of those, I'm interested, I'm going to keep reading, but not I got to know what happens here.
Yeah.
You know, what happens with thus and so, which is very different than most of the other books.
Yeah, there's so many swords in the fire that I'm kind of idly curious about Rion's husband and half a dozen other things. How will this play out? How will that play out?
There are a lot of loose threads. I agree with that entirely. But not to the point of how do they get out of this system. There's not a ticking clock they've got to deal with immediately.
Yeah.
That's kind of the fundamental difference for me.
Yeah.
And again, it's not a bad one, but it's different than the way most of all the other books have left.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm, again, curious where they're going and looking forward to it. Again, I'm enjoying the read. These are about 400 pages, give or take.
Yeah.
But still a reasonably quick read and a very enjoyable one.
Yeah, I agree.
So, anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.